optimization model. And actually, one of the things that you would learn about people who talk from industry, first of all, it's very difficult to talk after 10. I mean, he's so entertaining that it's tough to talk after him. But the other thing is that usually people from academia have this tendency to use, first of all, PowerPoint, which usually not people in academia do. Second is the talk usually is content free as much as possible, so very little math. The third is that if you ask questions, they give absolutely useless answers. I'll follow the first two, but I'll try to give some useful answers if you ask questions. But my goal here from this talk, actually, when Thomas asked me to give the talk, I said I need a lot of time to get approval for everything I'll say. And it is true. Sometimes it takes months. So he said, well, let's just try. And I said, okay, I'll try my best. So I actually got the approval, but after taking a lot of things out, a lot of them were actually equations. So what you will see is basically, and what I will try to do is to give you a flavor of where optimization is being used now, or it will be in the very near future. And in doing so, I'll start with giving you an idea about the whole operation of oil and gas, in particular in the upstream. And I'll mention the difference between the upstream and downstream in a minute. But the complexity of where oil companies try to find, develop, and extract oil is getting to a point where the tools that have been used so far are not working anymore. In particular, the difficulty now is that mostly these are areas where there is a huge amount of uncertainty. The decisions are extremely costly. We're talking about decisions that come potentially from some optimization models that can, for example, cost $100 to $300 million easily. A well in the offshore in deep sea, the cost of one well is about between $50 and $100 million. And a dry hole can mean basically for the decision maker who made that decision is termination or career change. So there is a lot of complexity in the way we make decisions, and I think the oil companies in general are getting more and more into optimization. As I mentioned, the abstract is optimization is well known in the oil and gas industry, but mostly in the downstream in the refineries. In the upstream, it has been limited for many reasons, particularly because of the huge amount of uncertainty. But also because these were a very difficult problem, they still are very challenging, and I'll talk about them in a minute. So this is basically kind of a life cycle of a given asset. It can be a reservoir, a field, a complex of fields. So they look first of all at, there are actually a couple of steps before that, but for the sake of this talk, we'll talk about subsurface imaging first, which means that somehow using some limited information, basically by surveying using a seismic method, which is basically, if you think of this boat, it's around it, behind it, there is an air gun, which produces some type of wave. They are reflected from different layers on the subsurface, and then you listen to them using some hydrophones. And using this information, somehow you have to figure out the subsurface structure. Okay, this is a huge problem, and I'll talk a little bit about it in more detail. Using this information, they look at the history of this area. And by using the information that they got from the seismic survey and their understanding of the basin in this area, they will figure out, well, if there is potentially some hydrocarbon accumulation in this reservoir or in this field. Based on these Two, they will build a geologic model and a reservoir characterization, which is basically what type of rocks are there, what type of fluids, what are the properties of these fluids, if there are any faults, all of that needs to be done in this step. Integrating and interpreting all of this to come up with a final geologic model that will feed into a reservoir simulation is a step that is done here. A reservoir simulation basically is a simulation of fluid flow in porous media. So rocks are porous media, so the physical regime here is, well, once I put my first well, assuming that the fluids were at equilibrium in the beginning, then the fluids will start flowing, moving. So to study the movement of fluids in this porous media based on your production policy, they need a very accurate reservoir simulation. The reservoir simulation, all what it gives you is based on your production policy, how the fluid front will move through the reservoir. But comes with it is huge area, which is reservoir management. And the reservoir management is basically how you design this policy. And actually, Tim has worked in a similar problem in the past. May not have the full complexity that we have here, but similar problem in aquifer cleanup. That's basically the same thing. Then some of the decisions, once you make this reservoir simulation and design an operating policy, you need to look at, well, now we need to put hardware. So you need to drill wells and the facility network. So this is basically the this stage, which is deep water facility design. And then after all of this done, it moves into, so in most major oil companies like ExxonMobil, Shell, BP, this part is done in a totally different group, which is exploration. This is done potentially in exploration or development. This is done in production. So every one of those steps may be done from a totally different group. And sometimes those people do not really talk to each other. The reason for this is that once those guys finish their acid, move it here, they have another thing coming on the pipeline, and it's time consuming and it's very difficult to move back and forth. So there is a problem that they recognize that sometimes, well, the geologic model is not really that accurate. So what do you do? There is no feedback loop, and many oil companies are trying to mitigate that right now. The industry trends that, as I mentioned, complex, high development cost fields with one chance to get it right, basically. Once you design your facility, you're stuck, because some of those facilities are built to fit your purpose. You paid for it, and if you made a decision, I need, for example, 20 wells here with a platform of this capacity, once this is done, you're stuck with it. You cannot go back. So these are very costly, and you have to do this in the face of huge amount of uncertainty. Exploitation of real-time data information. In the past, people who are operating those wells, you have manual looking at data coming and manual interpretation and then making decisions. Right now, if you're operating a field, you have hundreds of thousands of pieces of data that is coming to you per sometimes hour. How do you analyze them? What can you make sense out of all of this? So it's a large, more complex data set, and you probably hear or read in the literature about digital oil fields, e-fields, all these things that people talk about. The whole basic thing is that they are trying to replace the old technology of somebody manually responding to data coming in to infer something about the reservoir and then make a decision. They are trying to replace automate that process. Quantify the impact of surface uncertainty for robust decision making. This is a huge area, and people realize and recognize the impact of uncertainty. There are several initiatives in the industry trying to capture uncertainty, quantify it, and the big one where optimization come in, how do you actually make decisions based on some model of uncertainty. Integrated economic-based decision-making and substantial desktop computing capacity. As I mentioned, and as already actually Tim mentioned, some of these models, and one of them is in particular reservoir simulation. It can run based on which asset you're looking at to run one simulation from few hours to few weeks. This is what for one simulation, which translates into what Tim's talking about was one function evaluation. Now, if a one function evaluation takes, in particular, there is one case in West Africa, it runs in 7 weeks, one function. Is there any way you can optimize that? I'll leave that to Tim to answer. So the first step is basically to look at this seismic experiment. Usually you look at a certain area. This is just an example, 8 mile by 8 mile. This seismic vessel uses 12 data streamers. It's probably not clear here, but those are the streamers behind it where you have the hydrophones that will listen to the reflected wave. And what you get is something like this. So for example, assuming this is water, this is the sea bottom, and then we have salt bodies. These are sediments, and what you're looking for is, of course, you don't know this up front. What you're looking for is, well, how can I know the subsurface structure? So the simple fact is you have a source of waves, somehow you produce it, and they are refracted, reflected, and you get this big mess. And at the end, when you listen to it, you have these seismic signals coming back. And somebody here mentioned already that they're looking at signal processing. And you have this that for the first time I looked at it when I joined ExxonMobil, I thought that's basically garbage. I mean, I have no idea how they even find anything there, but they do. A lot of it's noise, but there is some real signals, and they want to see what which signal actually corresponds to the subsurface structure. So there are several ways to do that. And again, I'm talking about the details here, but you can see, for example, between these two here, the salt body is clearly defined. Here is another technology using Kirchhoff. There is some blurring during near the boundary. So the different ways to do this may produce different results. But the whole point of this is that at one point, you have a simulation that simulates basically the wave equation, and what you're giving is the travel time from the source up to the time you receive it, and you'd like to infer the subsurface structure. The problem is an inverse problem, very well known, been for a long time, but it's huge, and people to solve it, since again the forward simulation, the one that simulates the wave equation, the forward simulation can take, in particular for this one, can take up to maybe a few days to 2 or 3 weeks. So again, and the other thing is that after they run the wave equation and after they produce a result, they actually go back and manually change the results to fix some problems based on uncertainty. So there is a manual step in the simulation, and what you're trying to do is to put an optimization iteration on top of that. The problem is large scale, costly function evaluation, as many inverse problems, it's ill-posed, so you have many solutions, and the measure to actually assess the quality of the solution right now in many companies, they are using the well-known, basically, take a look at it and see if it makes sense. So you produce it, you produce a seismic section like the one that I showed, and an expert will come and look at it and say, yes, that looks fine, or no, just do more iteration. So I guess the stopping criteria here is not even a budget, it's somebody's looking at it and deciding whether it looks good or not. So this is one area of optimization. Reservoir management is basically, I was doing a study within ExxonMobil to figure out areas where optimization will be used in the future. And people mentioned reservoir management, and I tried very hard to get actually anybody to tell me exactly what they mean by reservoir management, and there is no agreed upon definition. So in a sense, it's basically every activity that goes into trying to maximize the value of that asset. What is the value of the asset that may be different from the operating oil company to the government that you're working with? So it really depends. The reservoir management is basically takes care of trying from the beginning to look into all the data to get a good idea about the reservoir and then design policies, production policies that overall maximizes the value of this reservoir. One way to measure value is, for example, net present value, so some economic yardstick. That's probably from the oil and gas company point of view, but from a government point of view, if you're working, for example, with West Africa or a country in Europe, for them, sweep efficiency is more important. Sweep efficiency is how much do you actually get out of the reservoir. For example, I'm not sure if that's a well-known fact or not, but right now, the most reservoirs, the amount or the percentage that you can get out, which is recovery, is basically between 30 to 40%. So you're leaving a lot behind. Part of it because physically you cannot get it out. But a lot of it is basically the estimate that about 30 more percent is basically left behind because our production policies are not good enough because of the uncertainty. We're not taking uncertainty into account. So that's a huge area. Simulation, which governs basically all of that, that's probably, I think, the only equation that I have in the whole talk. Basically, you have, the two main equations are the conservation of mass, and then you have Darcy's law that governs the fluid flow in porous medium. The uncertainty which comes in the geologic model comes into those factors here. So you have relative permeability, viscosity, and porosity. So these are things that have to do with both the fluid properties and the rock properties. The problem of uncertainty in this in the oil and gas business is that, in particular for those, you don't even have to characterize them. People, for example, give you probability distributions. And actually, it's not even a probability distribution. If you get a three-point distribution, it would be perfect. If they give you the upside, the downside, and an average, that would be perfect. But if you ask them, if you put three people, three very experienced reservoir engineers in a room and tell them, give me your best estimate of this distribution, they will usually come up with three different answers. So just characterizing uncertainty and quantifying it is a major source of problems in the oil and gas business. How to make decisions based on that, that's another problem. As I mentioned, the reservoir simulation is fluid flow in porous media. It requires actually unstructured gridding because of the difficulty in the geologic models. There are certain discontinuities like faults where you have to be careful. Some of these faults are permit fluid flow, some of them are not. So this is the difference between a sealed fault or not. There is adaptive models. So most of the reservoir simulation models are time stepping. So you simulate the fluid motion from one time to the other, and usually they run for an average life for reservoir is about 30, 40 years. Sometimes they go up to 90. So the time stepping requires some adaptive models. When you hear reservoir simulation in general, you think of those two equations that I put together, that I put in the previous slide, which is basically a couple PDEs, system of PDEs. But in reality, in all oil companies, when they say reservoir simulation, integrated into it is a facility network. So there is some hardware hooked into how do you actually inject fluids. When you get fluids, there is usually a production platform where there is some processing for the fluids. The hydrocarbon that you're extracting happens, and all of this is covered under this word of reservoir simulation. And so when you try to optimize over all that, some of those facilities exhibit this behavior that Tim talked about, which is the hidden constraints and the discontinuities that come with them. I'll pass those, and then I'll look into one of the interesting things that models that people use. When you run a reservoir simulation, what you get at each iteration is a saturation and a pressure. This is your main variables in the reservoir simulation, a saturation and pressure at each time step. You translate those into what makes or the quantity of interest of any oil and gas company, which is money. So basically, you translate the saturation and pressure into rates. What people try to simulate is fluid flow in porous media based on user intervention. So they say, okay, if they run this simulation up to, let's say, 360 days, and then the operator find out, for example, that gas to oil ratio or water to oil ratio past certain threshold, then they will shut in that well. So they put some logic in there to make that decision. So the simulation in reality also is not only a simple simulation of a physical phenomena, it's also a simulation of a user interaction with the system. So this is one of the things that we have in the ExxonMobil simulation, which is basically at every time step, they stop and do this. They minimize some economic yardstick, maybe just the allocation of injection rates, with constraints on facility limits, equation of state, physical limits. Again, the most common ones is that if the oil to gas ratio or the water to oil ratio passes certain threshold, you have to make some actions. This problem is, and this action basically is to shut in a well. This problem can be modeled as a mixed integer nonlinear programming problem. And it is very nasty and it is very large because we're talking about reservoirs that have tens to thousands of wells. And you're making decisions about every one of those wells. Of course, you may ask the question, well, but you're doing this within a simulation. What does this do to the actual simulation conversions at the end? And nobody really knows or try even to look into this. They do this, so you intervene within the simulation, make these decisions, and move forward, and you hope and cross your finger that you will actually converge at the end. Do you always converge? Mostly, yes, but not always. So here, given reservoir model, what is the optimal allocation of injection and production rates to achieve an overall objective? The problem again is large scale. We have integer variables, non-linearity, and costly function evaluation, and of course in the prism of uncertainty. Development planning is another problem that we looked at, and actually not only ExxonMobil, but many companies looking at. In the very beginning, before you start, just to fund a project, management need some assessment of how good is this reservoir. And based on this information, they will either bid or they will decide whether, for example, to consider a joint venture with another company or whatever. So the early development planning is a process by which there is no reservoir simulation. You cannot really run any fluid flow models because you don't really have much. So what do you do? Well, they usually use some very simplified models based on, well, this area looks like this area in West Africa that we work on 5 years ago. So they have these production profiles. These are algebraic models that they put together, and they use this as the reservoir response. These are nonlinear models, and they try to figure out, well, based on this, if I put 3 wells or 10 wells or 15 wells, how many production platforms do I want or do I need? How many wells do I need? Which well is connected to which production platform if we have more than one of those? And then should I, for example, if I'm, let's say, if one of those wells is producing gas and oil, this gas I can sell to the market or I can re-inject it again to enhance production. So which decision should I make? All of those questions can be answered, of course, by experience, or as we did at ExxonMobil a few years ago, building basically, these are the decisions that they have to go through, whether they need an LNG, if the LNG is done in year one, would you consider LNG or not? And if it is yes, is it in year one, and so on. So you have some uncertainty on making these decisions, and the combinatorial complexity is huge in this problem. The problem is modeled, so let me just say what is the model. It's you are given a candidate reservoir, and in particular for those large problems, let's say in Angola they have 7 or 8 reservoirs. You have wells, infrastructure options, markets. You have performance estimates from fields and reservoirs. These are not simulations, so these are relatively fast to run. You have infrastructure capacities, export constraints, capital limits, and on top of this you can put some environmental constraints. For example, until recently, the country of Nigeria used to allow flaring gas. If you've seen those gas fields where, or even oil fields where you produce some gas and then you're burning the gas, okay, that's flaring gas. Now, because of environmental issues and because gas now is expensive, in the past when they started 20, 30 years ago, it was worth nothing basically. For I think they have a limit by 2012 that there will be zero flaring of any gas. So that's another constraint that you have to put in, environmental constraint that you have to put in into a problem. You need to maximize economic value of some metric, let's say net present value, by choosing those decisions. Which reservoir or field to develop first? Well, although the question may seem really not important because, well, why don't we start with all of them? There is a penalty. In particular, if you look at the economic regime, there is a tax issues related to production. So in some fields, some small fields, you may be better off to delay them to later. also because of the uncertainty, you may choose to start with ones where you have more information and delay the others for later. Number capacities and scheduler for platforms, platform configuration and pipeline sizes, size and timing of gas compression facilities. I think I missed here the number of wells and where you actually put them. The market for hydrocarbon, oil and gas sales, LNG, and then depletion plan. All of these are decisions. Some of them are strategic. Some of them are long term. Some of them are more operational. The problem is actually, again, a mixed engine nonlinear problem. The smallest size problem that the largest size problem that we could solve had about 500 or 600 integer variables, 50,000 continuous variables, and about 40,000 to 50,000 constraints. And this was for a model for West Africa, Nigeria, and the neighbors. For that model, we did not consider uncertainty. Uncertainty right now, we have an active joint research work with Carnegie Mellon University looking at solving problems, mixed engine nonlinear program problems in the presence of uncertainty. One of the problems that we worked on lately is the drilling design. The drilling budget in oil companies is huge. I think ExxonMobil is $5 billion last year, and it's expected to increase this year. So the question is, can we drill cheaper wells? The second point is that there are potentially mechanical failures. There are so many things that can go wrong while drilling. It's a very expensive process. A drilling rig in offshore usually costs between $400,000 to $600,000 a day. This is just to rent it. So when a company decides to start drilling, they really want to finish it as soon as possible. So fast drilling is important because that translates into dollars. But also you don't want any trouble. So because you can actually lose your whole well. It's not only that you're losing the money of the drilling rig, but also you can lose the whole well if you make a mistake. So how to drill stable wells, and also impact on reservoir production. A decision like when you're drilling a well, the path of the well by itself is a major decision because it impacts the future production. And if you do a mistake, it's almost, there are some mitigations that you can do in the past, but it's almost impossible to re-drill a well in the same area. Especially, as I mentioned, those wells are extremely expensive. So the design parameter for any well are the location, surface location, the trajectory from the surface to where you penetrate the reservoir, and then the mechanical and the hydraulic regime during the drilling. So this is a cartoon of basically, you have a drilling rig, you're trying to drill, you have the drilling bit here, and it's, I mean, the mechanics, the basic model is simple. You're breaking the rocks using this drilling bit. And of course, if you keep the cuttings, which are the rock pieces, in there, the drilling bit will get stuck. So what do you do? Well, you have to bring all these rocks out. So the way to do this is by injecting some drilling mud, which is usually water-based or oil-based. So what are you trying to do? Well, I am trying to find an optimal drilling design controls. Optimal meaning you have actually two objectives. Drill as fast as possible, but as stable as possible. So stability, when you have to quantify what stability means, and also there is some cost function, and you can say rate of penetration, for example, would be your cost function. So what are the things that I have control over? I have control over basically all the things in white. So the mud density, the rotary speed, the flow rate, And those in black, these are quote-unquote state variables that I would like to control. Those are the ones that control the stability of the world. So every one of those need to be within limits, under check. So equivalent circulating density, if this increased too much, the drilling fluid will go into the formation and you lose it. If it is too little, the well, because you're, again, you're drilling in unconsolidated rock, will cave in and you lose it. So these are your constraints that defines the stability. And then you have these unknown parameters, the geomechanical parameters. Some of them are mentioned here, the rock strength, the pore pressure gradient, the stresses, all of those parameters are not known. You can get some idea about the distribution function, but you have to drill within this uncertainty. So the way we did this is basically, so you have this function you're trying to maximize, and it is again an expected value, the same as what Tim was looking at. So the first thing is we looked at the design of experiment for both the control variables and the uncertain model parameters. We had, I think, four parameters here and about six or seven here. And then you fit this function, these points, you fit a polynomial, a second order polynomial. This gives you basically those state variables that I mentioned before, those constraints. Every one of those is a function, a nonlinear function, generally nonlinear function on the controlled variables. Once you do that, what you really want is the probability of success, which is how can you drill within those limits. So it's defined as an integration, that's an expected value. So after you compute this using this way, which is a sum fit, you need the probability density the probability of success. And to do that, so you have this initial surrogate, you do another polynomial approximation for the integral, multi-dimensional integral, and then you compute the probability of success. It is not that expensive. It takes few minutes to compute. But the problem that you face in optimization is the following. You have this flat area, you're maximizing a probability. Okay, so you have these 0, 1. So you have these flat areas, as you can see here, have sometimes very steep derivatives, multiple solutions, non-convexity, numerical non-differentiability, expensive function evaluation, and multi-objective. So every problem that you can face an optimization problem. We actually use derivative-free method. We in both derivative-free and derivative-based. Of course, as you can imagine, derivative-based method, if you're here, okay, you're done, you're dead, right? I mean, it's a flat area, it looks at the gradient around it, zero, I'm happy, I'm at the solution, of course, which is not true. A derivative-free that has, I guess, what Tim called, what do you do next, which is what, in our case, we used a code called NOMAD by Dennis and O'Day, and in there, they split these two into a local step, this is where you do your local search, and a search step, where you do something else. So using the something else, we did some sampling of the space so that you can escape from these areas. And the hope is that you will end up somewhere here. So we were successful to some extent. And actually, there were a couple of really success cases where the drillers or the drilling engineers were able to save quite a bit. In one well, there is about what they told us is about $7 to $8 million in a budget of $5 to $6 billion a year drilling. If you can save 2 to 3%, that's huge saving. So they were very happy. Although in several cases, this is an example of the behavior that you can see. So you can see, for example, these flat areas, areas where you lose differentiability, like here, and actually these are the nicest figures that I have. The other ones were not released. They actually took them out from the presentation. They look a lot worse than this. So there are some problems of when we talk about derivative-free methods, the stuff that Tim was talking about. As John Dennis mentioned, these are really stupid algorithms. So you shouldn't use them unless you have to, and this is one case where you have to. One of the things that I'd like to mention also is that when you work in industry, we talked about the human factor. When you put optimization, there is a natural tendency to oppose the use of optimization. Why? If I ask somebody, well, what's a reservoir simulation? Well, it's a model to simulate fluid flow in porous medium. So what's an optimization model? Well, optimization model is actually a decision modeling tool. It's a decision making tool. You're trying to replace or enhance a decision process. And when you tell some people that I am trying to give you a tool to make a better decision that you're making right now, there is general tendency not to accept it. It's a job security issue, it's a turf issue. So one of the things that I'm really looking at right now is that how to get people to accept the technology. And in particular, one of the things that we always do in all I didn't talk about actually the software that we build, but in all of our optimization tools, we have the user as an integral part of the iteration, of the optimization iteration. We always give them the freedom to stop the optimization at any point and change whatever they want. They can change the add constraints, fixed variables, free variables, whatever. Part of the reason is that when they finish the optimization run and they get a solution, they have to go defend it in front of a manager. And usually in the past, they would say, well, we tried this, and because of this situation, we know that in West Africa or in Angola, we use that strategy, so we tried this. They can explain why what they came up with is optimal. When you give them optimization as a black box decision-making tool, that's difficult. Because now they cannot say, go to their manager and say, I pushed a button and they give me a solution. So there is an issue there of how to accept the technology. So part of what we're trying to do is to put the human back into the optimization iteration. And I think it paid off. The other thing that also working in industry, you realize that you have really to speak the language and you have to understand the application very well. Don't just, Tim already mentioned that they are working with this strange model. Yes, they do. And sometimes you have no idea. For example, this particular problem, when we first looked at this, I said, that's not a function that I want to maximize. Let me remodel it in a different way. And I did. And I thought it much more elegant, but there was absolutely no, they did not even want to discuss it. Okay, this is what we want to optimize. I have other problems with this. Actually, I did some experimentation when you actually change the world, we optimize here giving a world path. So the world path is fixed. If you try to perturb the world path a little bit, and I'm talking about very small perturbation, the probability of success goes berserk. Okay? So it's really not a good measure of probability of success or stability of the well. that study that I did, I talked to a group of drillers and they said, don't talk about this again. Because this is what we have, this is what they have been doing and they're working on for a long time. So don't talk about it now. I'm still optimistic that they will actually accept it one day. So, but my point is that when you work in industry, you really have to speak the language, you have to know the application very well. One thing that we also did in the beginning when we worked on this problem, as you can see, there are many solutions here. Every one of those has probability of success that is as high as possible. But some of them has, the user usually have another secondary objective. So for example, in one case, after we give them the solution, they said this is absolutely nonsense because you give me a solution here where the, here where the flow rate was too small. So we said, well, what's wrong with this small flow rate? Well, this is not what we want to do. This is not a, why? Well, because if the small flow rate means that it may adversely impact the rate of penetration. Well, you didn't put this into your model. The optimization gives you what you model. So we had to go back and do some changes to the model. It was not that difficult, but the point is, this interaction between the modeler, the optimization expert, and the engineer really is important. Giving a solution, giving a model one time and trying to solve it will not usually give meaningful solutions. I guess I'll try to finish quickly. Things that I did not talk about. Transportation of hydrocarbon. Okay. So you can do this either through pipeline flow optimization or basically transportation of hydrocarbon, either crude transportation through tanks or LNG, which is a big, huge thing right now. And these are classical transportation problems in one sense, but they are extremely difficult because of the constraints that are put on them on another sense. So, a textbook method will not work, and there are several universities right now that specializes in those logistic transportation problems for the oil and gas business. A typical optimization automated parameter estimation in many of the models that people use, I really, if you can think of, for example, the seismic inversion as an automated parameter estimation problem. The well planning and design, I did not talk in detail about that, but again, how many wells, where do you put them, how do you drill them, all of that, these are optimization models. The generally, mathematical optimization adds significant values to upstream business, and as the upstream basically is all the activities including the exploration, the drilling, development, and production of the hydrocarbon. Once you have the hydrocarbon out and it's transported to a customer or to a refinery, that's a downstream. So for the upstream, optimization recently has been really increasing rapidly. And we did this study a while back, we looked at the number of publications of optimization related to the oil and gas, and it looks like that. In the last 7-8 years, there is a huge number of, actually, for those of you who will go to SIAM meeting, optimization next week, there are usually not many oil and gas companies show up. I mean, SIAM optimization is looked at in industry as those very smart, sometimes crazy mathematicians, but they a lot of more theory than practice. But lately, in particular for this one, there are at least two sessions that has to do with upstream optimization. I have one, I'm chairing a session, and there is somebody, I think, from Delft University in the Netherlands who's chairing the other one. There is also two sessions on mixed engine nonlinear programming that both of them are chaired by somebody from ExxonMobil, in particular for the downstream. So there is a huge amount of interest for an optimization. The reason for this is, again, these are complex decisions. There are a lot of constraints on the systems, and manual optimization cannot work anymore. It's just too difficult, too complex, and people realize that. The decision has been made usually, as I mentioned, you have the geologists working alone, the drilling engineers, the reservoir engineers. What optimization brings to the picture is integrating all of those in one mathematical model that hopefully will give a more robust solution. So I guess the last one is just a summary of all that. One thing that I would like to mention is that probably in the current state of the economy, people have difficulty with jobs, but oil and gas companies are still hiring, hiring a lot actually. And a lot of the jobs are in the area of R&D. So in particular, for example, ExxonMobil, we have it's called ExxonMobil Upstream Research. So we have a whole company, it's not a division, it's a whole company under ExxonMobil for research. We have 650 PhDs of course, the majority are usually engineers and geophysicists and geologists, but we have a bunch of mathematicians, computer scientists, physicists who are trying to work on these models. So it's a very, in my opinion at least, a very interesting area and developing very rapidly. And there is a lot of effort that is put right now in trying to automate a lot of these steps that they are looking, that they are doing to extract oil and gas. And in many of those steps, optimization is core. Thank you.